From the LA Times studios, I'm Sarah Rodman, and you're listening to The Real, your source for all things entertainment. And we are here today to talk about what else? The Oscars. And I am joined by two of my fabulous, talented, attractive, esteemed colleagues. Introduce yourselves to the listeners, people.
I am Amy Kaufman, and I stalk celebrities, so I can tell you all about what they're doing behind the scenes.
And I am Trevelle Anderson, and I am your ambassador of Black queer magic.
So Amy and Trevelle had the enviable, exciting, and stressful task of actually being at the Oscars. Trevelle was on the red carpet and backstage in the press room when people came back with their trophies and answered questions of the media. Amy was in the show, and she got to go to all the fancy parties afterwards. So we are hoping that the two of you could take us through the big night, the 90th Academy Awards. So Trevelle, you're on the red carpet. What time do you get there? What's the first thing that starts happening?
I got there at 1 o'clock, which is actually early for me. We're supposed to be there at 1:30, and usually I slide through at like 1:28. And then the carpet starts at 2. Nobody important starts coming until like 4 o'clock.
That's when the accountants usually come from PricewaterhouseCooper,
right.
And usually would be like, ugh, we don't want to talk to them this year. You were probably like, excuse me.
But actually, I don't think they walked the carpet this year. I don't remember them walking by, unless I was ignoring the entire world, which might have been happening. I don't remember seeing them coming by with the suitcases.
No press this year.
They probably were like, we're not answering any questions about Envelope Gate last year.
They were trying to focus on the show.
Right.
So is the red carpet as chaotic as it seems looking at it on television?
It's very chaotic, and actually even more chaotic. So like the way the carpet is set up, they have three lanes. The furthest back lane is for people who just have tickets to the show. Then the middle lane is for the celebrities who don't want to do press.
That's called the diamond lane.
Ooh, first class. And then the closest lane to press are the people who want to do press interviews. Mm. And so you have people literally in all three lanes the entire time. You have publicists and show producers rushing people through the press. We're screaming, trying to get people's attention and have them come over to us. It's a lot going on.
So that's one thing I feel like a lot of people don't understand. So you're in a little pen, and on either side of you, there's people from other publications, from television shows. And basically, if you want to talk to Viola Davis, what do you have to do when Viola Davis walks by?
You've got to literally lean across the little barricade, try to either get Viola Davis's attention or get her publicist's attention. Luckily, I have great relationships with both, and she remembered me from my interview I did with her, so I was able to get her to chat with us for a couple seconds.
Also, were you not standing next to Mario Lopez?
I was standing next to Mario Lopez. He had a great makeup job. It was wonderful.
Did you talk to Viola Davis? Who are some of the other exciting stars that you got to talk to?
I think one of the most memorable people that I spoke to was Tiffany Haddish. She's the hot one of the moment. She's wearing this Eritrean dress because her father, who passed away, told her that if she ever made it to the Oscars, for her to represent her people.
Aww.
So she had on this traditional outfit. And there's this one moment where Meryl Streep, who's also fairly late to the carpet, she's in the diamond lane, and she's walking. Tiffany Haddish is with us at the press. She sees Meryl Streep. She stops her interview, runs over, jumps over
the velvet rope.
And stands right in front of Meryl Streep with her hands on her hips. It's a really great moment.
Do you know what they said?
She was like, hey, I want you to play my mom. The same thing she said on stage. I want you to play my mama. Let's make this money, girl.
Was that the first time she met her?
I think so. I'm not sure, but it seemed as if she was like, I'm going to have my
I love that.
Right
like, make it happen.
Carpet.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I didn't realize she was, I saw the clip of that. I didn't realize she was talking to you.
Not to me. She had gone down to another press person, but she literally stops her interview, jumps over the velvet rope. It was a really great moment. I love seeing like first timers on the red carpet because you see them trying to acclimate themselves to everyone around them.
And were many people wearing the Time's Up pin? Did you feel like people were sort of representing that?
There were a lot of people wearing Time's Up pins, but not necessarily the people you would expect to be wearing them. So it wasn't necessarily the most vocal actresses that have been a part of the movement wearing the pin. They were obviously talking about the movement. It was kind of the tertiary people, producers and cinematographers and you know, below the line people who were showing their support in that particular way.
And before we get off the carpet, I just have to ask, because it looked like the members of the cast of Black Panther that showed up, obviously this was not a movie that was in contention for the Oscars, but has been having such a huge last few weeks. Did you sense the reception was as big as it seemed
So, yeah, so at the red carpet, on the other side of the press is these fans. There's risers with fans and audience members sitting in them, and they cheer when they see somebody. Lupita Nyong'o, Chadwick, Danai, Winston Duke, when they came onto the carpet, they got the loudest cheer of the entire night. It was kind of deafening. So they're receiving a lot of attention, a lot of support.
I posted a picture of Chadwick on the carpet, and it got more retweets than anything else from last night. Yeah.
So maybe this will translate into next year's Oscars for Black Panther, and finally a superhero movie will get some award show love. Okay, so the red carpet is now done, and you guys are moving into the show. So you're setting yourself up in the press room. Amy, what are you doing at this point when the show's about to start?
So we are backstage. There's about five reporters who are allowed to go. And imagine the stage exit, like you're right there.
So you're standing like where they pull the ropes to pull the curtains up and down, like tucked away in a corner as people walk off stage. They're walking by you.
Like I'm basically leaning on that jet ski the whole time, just trying to hide and not be in the way and not get kicked out for, you know, crowding. And so, you know, backstage, it's sort of how you would imagine, just a lot of monitors, some sort of makeshift desk setups where the producers are sitting, making sure everything's going okay. There's the accountant standing with her pile of envelopes. And then there's this like trophy shelf where the Oscars, looking about like as shiny as anything I've ever seen, are waiting to be handed out. And there's a man who wears these white, I think look like felt gloves. And he's only allowed to touch them because you can't smudge them. And so when someone wins, they already have the Oscar in hand, basically, and they come off the stage, and then there would just be this, like, half circle of photographers snapping immediately. And people often would be so surprised to see, like, all, like, they were freaking out from having won, and then there were just, like, 9 billion flashes in their face. So it's pretty, like, chaotic.
And so one of my favorite moments that I saw last night was Jordan Peele coming off stage looking really emotional. And I feel like in the position that you were in, you probably got to see a lot of things like that. That moment that they turn away from the camera and the camera cuts to commercial, but you're seeing the raw feeling of what it is. Was there anybody that you were sort of surprised or impressed by? They held it together and then they fell apart, or any special things that you saw?
I didn't see anyone like, you know, sobbing. But you know who was weirdly emotional was Kobe Bryant. Like he came off with his Oscar and he kept looking at it like truly astonished. And he kept saying, "Oh my God. Oh my God." Like over and over. And that was, I was like, this means a lot to him. Okay. Like he has that NBA. Do you get a ring? Yes. NBA ring. Really he wanted the trophy.
She's not from LA. She's from a place where we, well, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So he was pretty emotional. And I think after the This Is Me performance, that was one where Keala Settle, I believe her name is, you know, she had been actually rehearsing out loud that song, like belting it out before she went on stage. So we're just standing there and she's like, "Look out!" Because, you know, she's like belting so loud during commercial break. And then she came back and she just goes, "Yes, mother effers." And, you know, people are excited when all that adrenaline is up.
That was the best performance of the night, by the way.
It was so good.
Now, I believe I read somewhere in the Los Angeles Times today that somebody handed you a glass of wine, asked you to hold a glass of wine.
Jarell, it was your girl, Tiffany.
Yes.
She comes over and, like, she gives me her glass of wine before she's about to go on stage. And she's like, "Girl, like, hold this for me. Like, I'm coming back for this, okay?" And then she comes off stage and there's, you know, she walks right by me. I'm like, of course she's not going to get her wine. She can get another glass. But she actually doubled back and came back for it. And she was like, "You didn't Bill Cosby this, did you?" And I was
oh, no.
And I was like, "No." She's like, "Good, good, good." So that was
I love her.
Amazing.
Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph, that was one of the best moments of the night last night, too. Now, how much of thinking of that? So you're side stage. You're back in the press room. So you're not actually really getting to watch the entire show because when people come back, they turn the show sound down, right?
Right, right.
And you then are focused on the person in front of you that's just won their Oscar and they've come off stage and now they're talking to you. Now, what was it that Jordan Peele said?
Jordan Peele, he takes to the stage. He comes in. He's like, "Am I about to be auctioned off?"
And why did he say that?
Well, he says that because the press room is full of white people and we have these little placards with numbers on them that we raise.
Right. Regardless of race, it does feel like an auction.
Well, yes.
So you hold up your number
like
a paddle.
Like a paddle.
and then
similar
you are
to
called
the scene.
On, like, Trevelle is number 21.
Yes.
So you're like, 21, 26,
yes.
27.
Similar to the scene in Get Out where they, you know, are auctioning off who's going to have Daniel Kaluuya's body once they take him over.
So
it was hilarious.
Did people laugh at that, or was it like weirdly uncomfortable?
No, everyone laughed because everyone was also very excited to see him win. I think a lot of people in the press room were rooting for him. And so when he won, there was a loud, audible cheer in the room, which we probably shouldn't be doing.
Well, you know, they say there's no cheering in the press box. But but that's a good point that you make, though, because certainly that does happen. So were there moments in the night besides Jordan Peele where you got the sense that the press room was behind the person that had just won? Or everybody was like, darn it.
I think there were some surprises because you could hear audible gasps at certain moments.
Jordan Peele, like, backstage, Sandra Bullock was, like, so down when he won. She was, I couldn't tell if she was just wearing makeup, but it looked like she was tearing up. And when he did come back and was getting all of his pictures taken, she, like, walked over to just watch it happening. Like, she was, you know, people were really excited for him.
Yeah, it was a moment. And I mean, I think we weren't sure if he was going to get it because, you know, the race was basically between him and Martin McDonagh. But he won it out. As far as other people who I think the press were excited to see win, obviously Guillermo winning for director and best picture.
Well, let's discuss that. Like, what was the reaction to the best picture?
Well, I think because we weren't sure who was going to win, right? Three Billboards had won everything leading up until this point, and so it seemed like they would take it home, especially since Frances McDormand had won Best Actress and Sam Rockwell had won Best Supporting Actor. I think they were just happy to see him win because everybody likes Guillermo. And the film, Sally, a lot of people think deserves a lot more attention for it. And so the film winning just kind of says something, I think, for the industry and for the press. And so that was an interesting moment to see backstage. And then just general, I think when Kobe came back, the press were definitely eating out of his hand. Like, they definitely were, like, in awe of this being that was in front of us. That was interesting.
That is interesting.
Isn't it interesting? It is.
We won't linger on that. So the show's going on. You are watching stuff from the wings. You're in the press room. It's winding down. So you're getting ready to jet from backstage to which party? The Governor's Ball first?
I did not hit the Governor's Ball, but I went to Vanity Fair. And basically the way that works is it's been going on for many years, and it's really hard to get in. So they give you a one-hour window where you can be in there. And mine was from 11 to 12. And you have to get in this thing that looks sort of like a security badge to get into your office, like a thicker credit card. It's some sort of chip thing that they scan because the security is so tight. And all of Santa Monica Boulevard in Beverly Hills is, like, very cordoned off. It's just a line of black SUVs. And once you get in there, it's everyone you could imagine from all different worlds of fame. It's like, it's not just, you know, of course there was Allison Janney and Sam Rockwell and all the people who'd won the big prizes, but there was Drake, which I was tray excited about.
Yes.
I made prolonged eye contact with him. Okay.
Wow, I think that means you're married now.
He is Jewish, so I am very, very open to it. So Drake was hanging with, like, French Montana and Diddy. Diddy was, like, broing down with Daniel Kaluuya. He was, like, really tight with him.
So when the Frances McDormand posse, as she was referring to them, showed up, at this point she had already had her Oscar taken from her?
Yeah, so at the Governor's Ball, I guess, Frances McDormand's Oscar was taken from her, and the guy was eventually arrested who took it. Mm-hmm. I mean, smart move, bro.
Yeah, he posted on Facebook with it.
What the heck?
Not the smartest criminal.
And that's what Frances was saying when she rolled in. Like, she was telling anyone who would listen that someone took her Oscar. Like, she was talking to Jason Blum, the producer of Get Out. She was like, do you know someone stole my Oscar? And then she, on the red carpet, stopped Tiffany Haddish and was like, someone stole my Oscar. And then Tiffany was go to her friend and was like, she just said someone stole her Oscar. Like, it was a game of telephone. Like, everyone in the room was learning about this dramatic saga. But yeah, Frances, as Sarah has pointed out, for someone who doesn't seem down for that award show life, she was quite into the party scene, I think.
Good for her. And concerned that she had lost the award.
Right. Yes.
So, but I believe that it has been retrieved and they have been reunited. And so it's okay. So you're at the party. Are you dancing? Are you mingling? Are you eating? Or are you in, like, a cattle pen, like, gawking?
Well, so you, the other thing, you can't talk to anyone unless they speak to you, just like backstage. It's a whole night of feeling like you're really cool, but also like the biggest loser of all time. Like, you're like,
like you get to go to the party, but you don't actually
right,
get
like,
to enjoy
I'm here,
it.
But like everyone looks down upon me, and I cannot speak to. If I speak to anyone, I will be shamed. So yeah, you can't speak to anyone, and you're not supposed to take notes. Obviously, like you can go on your phone and take notes, but you have to like go in a corner to do it. So that's
like
weird.
Pretend that you're texting.
Exactly, which
yeah,
everyone
look
is
like you're
anyway.
A reporter, basically.
So, but I, yes. You know, I'm like standing near Drake, like full phone on, like do 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 do. So
most
yeah.
importantly, Amy, who are you wearing?
it wasn't at that point. Honestly, I made a quick pit stop at home and I put on a pair of boots and a full jacket because I was really cold. My feet hurt, and I was like, I don't care. I'm going to the Vanity Fair party and like. If I need to be really observing, I need my feet to be in their best possible condition.
Absolutely. And Travel, who were you wearing?
That's a good question. I don't know how to pronounce the name of the jumpsuit, but it's sickening, and you can go check it out on Instagram.
You guys need to follow Travel on Instagram during award season because then you can weigh in on his choices.
Yes, you can help me get dressed for the award shows.
Yes,
I
it's
do
a
polls
poll for
like
each
that.
Show, and it is always quite lively, as are the two of you. Thank you so much for joining us. And tell the people where they can find you on social media, please.
On Twitter, I'm at Travel Anderson. And on Instagram, I'm at RayZhon.
Say that again. It's what?
RayZhon.
Rayzhon.
Yeah.
And Amy?
Damn, mine's so lame now. It's Amy K in LA.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we are going to talk with film critic Justin Chang and award season analyst Glenn Whipp and hear their take on the Oscars.
Master storyteller Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water is an otherworldly fable set against the backdrop of Cold War-era America circa 1962. In the hidden high-security government laboratory where she works, lonely Eliza, played by Sally Hawkins, is trapped in a life of isolation. Eliza's life is changed forever when she and co-worker Zelda, played by Octavia Spencer, discover a secret, classified experiment. Richard Jenkins, Michael Shannon, Michael Stuhlbarg, and Doug Jones round out the all-star cast.
No one's ever called him a great mind, but even he manages to hit the can 7% of the time. Excuse us, sir.
No. That's all right. Go ahead. You ladies seem to be chatting enjoyably. Girl talk, no doubt.
Get The Shape of Water on iTunes Movies.
I am now joined by two esteemed, handsome, well-tailored gentlemen.
I am Justin Chang, a friend of Sarah Rodman's and a film critic for The Times.
I'm Glenn Whipp. I cover award season for about 15 more minutes for the Los Angeles Times.
And if you could see him, you would know that he's so happy this is almost over. But it's not over yet. So you guys cover the Oscars from a different perspective than Amy and Travel, who were just with us. You are here in the office, furiously watching and writing. So where were you last night during the show, and what were you doing?
I was in the office. My assignment was to write a story, kind of the road to the Best Picture, how blank won Best Picture. But because this year was so kind of unpredictable, I had to write three stories, 1,000-word stories, on how Get Out won Best Picture, how Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri won Best Picture, how The Shape of Water won Best Picture. My favorite one was the Get Out one. That was a really good story. And
that will never see the light of day.
Yeah, it was very lively and had a lot to say, but that was deleted, as was the Three Billboards story, and then we landed on Shape of Water.
You sound so excited about that. You're such a writer. You're like, I wanted the one that I wrote the best story about.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the best story because that would have been a vastly superior outcome.
Oh.
So
Justin's throwing down already.
Yeah.
He's ready to complain. I love it. So how well did you do in your predictions overall, since that is your prediction meister?
I did well. But, I mean, every year...
You're not giving us a number, though. So how well did you do?
It was 19 out of 24.
Oh, that's great.
Enough for most people to win their Oscar pools. But not every year I want 24 out of 24. And
have you never gotten that?
No.
You've never gotten a perfect
score?
It's
hard because of those shorts categories.
So was there a fist pump moment last night for either one of you, divorced from predictions, but just personally where you were like, yes.
Yeah, I was really happy when James Ivory won Best Adapted Screenplay for Call Me By Your Name. Not a surprising choice at all, but, you know, he's James Ivory. His name stands for half of, you know, Merchant Ivory, an entire genre of filmmaking unto itself that has come to prominence through the Academy Awards in large part. So it's kind of amazing and wonderful that he finally won his first Oscar at the age of 89 after three directing nominations. I was thrilled to see Mark Bridges win Best Costume Design for Phantom Thread.
And he also won the jet ski.
The jet ski as well. How can we not forget for the shortest speech? Deservedly so. That image of him on, you know, with Helen Mirren, you know, writing, you know, like it's one of like Barker's Babes or something, was very, very funny. A memorable image. So, yeah, those were my two favorite films of the night of, you know, that were in any contention for any prizes. And of course, they were just sort of kissed off with, you know, the screenplay is not a lesser prize. It's an important award. Very, you know, I think screenwriters deserve more respect. That's why I think it was great that James Ivory and Jordan Peele, two wonderful representatives of this, you know, two vastly different generations of screenwriters, both equally deserving, I think. But overall, yeah, there was a curious absence of surprise, I think, throughout this whole season. You know, Gary Oldman, Frances McDormand, Allison Janney, Sam Rockwell, you know, and I mean, maybe it's just that I wished I'd liked those performances better, but even, you know, surprises are nice. Surprises are good. It's good for awards-giving organizations, not just the Academy, but certainly including them, to spread the love a little, to acknowledge that there is more than one right answer, to acknowledge the wealth, the diversity, if you will, of great work being done in this industry, in this medium.
And diversity, so, not meaning the common meaning that we have now,
sure,
but the diversity of talent.
I think diversity
well.
Of talent. I think of also, there's, you know, we did have four white winners. I think there's room for diversity of other things as well. You know, mm-hmm. I just think there's this very tedious lockstep mentality that set in this year more than even in previous years. And we've talked about this on the show, but, you know, where the four acting winners were preordained. Guillermo del Toro was preordained. He's a wonderful director. I don't think there was a more beloved man in that room than Guillermo del Toro that night. You knew he was going to win.
Being talented and lovely, I feel like, goes a long way. I mean,
it seems
so universally beloved.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've interacted with him in interviews, and he's just so nice. I mean, the fact that he participated in that Jimmy Kimmel bit, walking over to the theater.
Terrible.
But as far as the show itself was concerned, other than that particular stunt, which you both clearly did not enjoy, were there things about the show that you thought that you found entertaining?
My fist pump moment was seeing New York Film Critics Circle supporting actress winner Tiffany Haddish talking about some diversity in choices of acting winners. Tiffany Haddish and Maya Rudolph on stage together presenting, because I just interviewed Paul Thomas Anderson a couple of weeks ago and was egging him on to write a movie for Tiffany Haddish and his wife Maya Rudolph. And here they are on stage presenting together. I think we're one step closer
with Anderson
to that movie.
With Do you Anderson think that you made that happen? That you put that bug in Paul Thomas Anderson's ear?
Well, he has been talking to Tiffany Haddish in this past few weeks. And I said, you know who would be great with her? Your wife. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, absolutely. And now
you're
have
gonna
more
get
evidence.
Producer's credit, I think. Is that what that means, right?
Yeah,
when the movie eventually comes out?
Maybe associate producer. Co-producer.
Exactly. So now that we have come to the conclusion, almost, of award season, and it all starts again tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. What are your favorite memories from this award season, or are you just looking forward to it being over?
I love that you're saying, you know, we're going to be talking about the Oscars again tomorrow, because I have to write this story every year. Here are the movies that we'll be talking about at next year's Oscars. So I'm going to be... I remember Justin actually emailing you last year saying, how do you make this
Sundance?
Call Me By Your Name at Sundance?
Yeah.
That sounds like a really good movie. Mm-hmm. And The Big Sick. We were talking about those two movies and Mudbound. I don't know that there was anything at Sundance this year that we'll be talking about.
Yeah,
in 2019,
it's kind of it probably maybe shows my own kind of, you know, because Get Out, I think, had...
Get Out had the sneak.
I don't know if I'd... Had I seen Get Out by that point? I'm not sure. But that was also a Sundance movie that then kind of, you know, became a sensation within... And, but did anyone then even guess that it would, you know, be a Best Picture nominee, that it would win Best Original
That was
screenplay?
In my Get Out, How Get Out won the Oscar story.
That great story really that no read. One's ever going to read.
I want to read that story, Glenn, when we're done with this.
Yeah, we need to go upstairs and read that story after this. So capping things off... People are going to go to the movie theater this weekend. They can see one movie that was highlighted at the Oscars. What movie do you tell them to go see?
Well, I'm going to answer this and also fold this into the question of what was my greatest awards season moment, because they're one and the same. Phantom Thread, which is still in theaters and which I saw on Friday night with my wife at the live orchestra screening. Beautiful, full orchestra performance of Johnny Greenwood's wonderful score, which should have won the Oscar on Sunday night, but didn't. And I think it's important because it's a reminder that at the end of the day, away from all the hoopla and the pomp and tedium of awards season, it really is about the movies. This is a masterpiece that I saw for the third time, and it, you know, was just as great as it was the first time, even better. And it was a celebration of cinema. It was not us, you know. No shade to Netflix. Well, maybe a little shade to Netflix. We went out, you know, on kind of a cold night with, you know, 1,600 other people to see this live event and to have our attention just held by this movie for 2 hours. It was just extraordinary, and it gives me the energy to dive back in tomorrow if I must. Maybe I'll take a few days reprieve. Yes. But it's like there is something to know that, no, it's not cheesy of me to say I believe in the movies. I really, really do. It's what gives, and I think we all do. I think it gives us the stamina to keep going.
I don't know if it's because I'm tired, but that was beautiful. Top that, Glenn.
Well, I was at that same screening.
Yes, when Glenn was there.
In the same row as Justin. And it was my third time seeing Phantom Thread as well. And what was remarkable, because there was this live orchestra in the Ace Hotel Theater, was that I forgot often that the orchestra was there. I got so enveloped in that movie again. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. And then I went, oh, yeah, there's this orchestra playing live. But I was so into the movie that I forgot all about that. And then, I mean, for me, you know, I spent 6 months with these movies and these filmmakers. And the great thing about this year is that I genuinely like the people. Mm-hmm. Because you run into them time and time again. Greta Gerwig, Jordan Peele, Paul Thomas Anderson, and these are great people to spend a few months with. And it's not always the case.
Yes. When we can get good and good together, good filmmakers and good people, then we all win. Well, thanks, you guys, for talking about the magic of the movies with us. Please tell the people where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Justin C. Chang.
And you can find me at Glenn Whip.
That's where we're at. Thank you so much for listening to The Real. Please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite listening and download us. Rate, review us. We really enjoy feedback. So until next time, I'm Sarah Rodman.
To get these and many other award-nominated films, go to iTunes.com/Oscars.